To meet these problems, explanations are given that have been obtained from Voldar and others associated with him. These are given without the intention of entering into disputes with modern science. The bulk of the material in this book has been presented in chronological order, and the transmissions reproduced verbatim with slight editing to reduce redundancy. The date, time and origin of these transmissions are given, as well as any points of interest. Many tape recordings of the radio transmissions are still extant and have been heard by numerous people. Any reader familiar with space lore will recognize that themes occurring in other books are in Voldar's story. No attempt has been made to correlate this account with those of other authors, as we feel that our story must be told as we received and understood it. Those readers who see this story as an elaborate contrived hoax are left with the problem: by whom? And for what reason? Carl van Vlieden, UFO Contact from Planet Colders, A Cosmic Dialogue, Contents, Dedication, Acknowledgement, Preface by the Publisher, Introduction by the Author, Chapter 1 Voldar, Chapter 2 I Am Wayora, Chapter 3 Melka, Earth's Halfway Station, Chapter 4 Proof and Denial, Chapter 5 Withdrawal from Earth, Chapter 6 Invasion, This Part is in Another Doc. Chapter 7 A Planet on Her Knees, Chapter 8 Peace Returns to Colders, Chapter 9 End of an Era, Chapter 10 A New Venture, Chapter 11 Other Universes, Chapter 12 Two Confederations Meet, Chapter 13 Earth Transmissions, Chapter 14 Project Fireball, Chapter 15 Earth Rescue, Chapter 16 Earth Base Compromised, Chapter 17 Earth Base Evacuated, Chapter 18 Human Conditioning, Chapter 19 Polarity, Chapter 20 Evacuation Conditioning Station, Conclusion, Epilogue, Appendix I, Appendix 2, Appendix 3, Appendix 4, Appendix V, Appendix VI, Statements and Letters, Teleportation of Automobile, Reciprocal Paradoxes, UFO Photographs, Voice Recording, Gravity Push versus Gravity Pull, List of Illustrations, Bibliography, Dash, Chapter 1, Voldar, An Astral Craft. Not meant that it is from astral plane, but so named after the constructor of the ship named Astral, described later, came from across the void into our universe and landed on Earth. The journey ended just as the space age dawned on the only known inhabited planet in this solar system. Sputnik had just circled the globe with a bleeping voice that was heard by millions of Earth's inhabitants. The decision to go to the moon had been taken and soon man would expand his domain. One small step into space. But this was a routine journey for the commander of the astral craft, Wayora, his 14-man crew and a passenger. They had all been trained for travel through the timeless passages of the universe. It was no novelty for them, as their ancestors had perfected it many generations ago. On this occasion they came to bring a brilliant, young, aspirant commander to do his 2-year training period on Earth. It was dark when he set foot on the planet, but there were some people waiting to meet him. The landing was on the same beach where, 18 years before, they had eagerly awaited the arrival of his immediate superior Wayora when he too had come to serve his apprenticeship on Earth. Now it was Voldar's turn. Is it incredible? I found it difficult to believe too, but fortunately I was chosen by Voldar to tell this story to the world. I had been interested in UFOs for many years, reading about them where I could, hoping to see one. But I never did. And then I heard of a young man in Durban who had not only seen a craft from outer space but had met its occupants and was still in touch with them. There had been transmissions through a radio coming from a spacecraft, many had been recorded and a small group of witnesses had gathered to hear them. I heard several tapes and wanted to be a member of this group. Most of all, I was eager to meet Edwin, this extraordinary young man, but it took me nearly 7 years to do so. Then suddenly, a way opened up and I was invited into the sanctum of this mystery. Before entering Edwin's house, I glanced up at the edge of the roof where the antenna was positioned on a short vertical stub. It looked just like any ordinary FM antenna, nothing unusual about it. My eyes followed the feed line which ran from it to a lead-in along the side of the gable. Who on earth would have thought that here, in this humble home, lived someone who was in communication with beings from outer space? I wondered about those giant radio telescopes manned by scores of scientists. Had Edwin beaten them to it? I shook my head and entered the lounge, and when I had settled down in an armchair, I asked Edwin to tell me his story from the beginning. How he had met a man from outer space for the first time. "It's a long time ago now," he said, looking up at the ceiling, narrowing his eyes. "It happened one afternoon. It must have been in 1960. I can still remember clearly how one of the directors of the firm I was working for at the time showed him around the factory. He was tall, arid, well-built, dressed in a sports jacket, had long trousers and an open neck shirt. I would say he was just under 2 meters tall, and had a round, open face with dark hair. He would have been about 30 years old. He was introduced to me as Mr. George K. The firm had advertised in the paper for a radio technician, and I was told that he would be starting at the beginning of next month. Yes, that's how it all started." Here Edwin paused for a moment as though he needed to take his thoughts back in time to those days when he was a mere youth and served his apprenticeship. Then he continued, "He came to work in my department and we had to work very closely together, both on the same assembly line of radio receivers." He paused. "We had our tea and lunch breaks together and we hit it off well right from the start. I never noticed anything unusual about him. His English was perfect and he never gave me any cause to think he was anything but an ordinary guy. I thought he came from Johannesburg, at least, he seemed to know that city very well. Technically, he was very competent and soon I took all my problems to him for solutions. I started to give him lifts on my motorbike to and from the factory. He stayed at the old K Hotel on Smith Street in Durban, now demolished, which was on my route from a sugar estate, north of Durban. Before I was married I lived there at my sister's home and George and I saw a lot of each other. You know, we spent many weekends together fishing and George turned out to be quite a good fisherman. He had no tackle himself so he borrowed my rods, and many a night we spent fishing together. One of our favorite spots was Patterson's Groin. This is the one opposite the City Beach Baths. I believe the groin is in poor condition now, but 15 years ago, it was in better shape. That is when the subject of life in space came up. We were fishing one night, there was a clear sky and the stars were out, when suddenly a satellite came sailing across the sky. I remember saying to George, "I wonder if that is a Sputnik or one of those flying saucers everyone is talking about these days?" George replied, "What do you think of the possibility of the existence of life in outer space? And do you believe that there could be life on Venus, or other planets?" I said that I had an open mind on the subject and that, as far as I was concerned, it would be strange if we were the only life in the universe. But I had my mind more on fishing at that time in life than on life out in space. And so the subject passed, but George kept on bringing it up every now and then. Then, one day, about 3 months after we first met, George said to me, "Supposing, Edwin, I gave you absolute visible proof of life in space by showing you an extraterrestrial spacecraft, would you believe it then?" "Yes," I said, "if I can see a spacecraft with my own eyes, I would believe it." Little did I realize at that time that I was talking to a space being at that very moment. "Right," said George, "let's go fishing this coming Saturday night." Well, what I saw that night I will remember long as I live. It removed all doubt I had of the existence of UFOs. I had been told about life in space by my own father before he died. But I had never seen any space beings or spacecraft. Come to think of it, there were some peculiar episodes in my youth which I could not understand until I met George. So, on that Saturday night, I picked up George on the motorbike. I had brought all the bait and fishing tackle as I usually do and was therefore surprised to see that George had a small leather-covered case with him, which I had never seen before. I asked him what he had in it but he said, "Oh, that is something extra for us to eat, just in case." I left it at that and we went off to our favorite spot on Patterson's Groin. It was about sunset when we arrived and there were a lot of others there, as was usual on a Saturday night. The fishing was very good that night. By midnight, The other fishermen were starting to move off, and about 2 a.m. George and I were alone out there on the groin, and the beach was also deserted. When the last person had left, George said, "Let's forget about fishing now, I want to show you something." He put down his fishing rod and opened his case. I switched on my flashlight and was surprised to see that it contained a radio set. George pulled out the telescoping antenna, which consisted of two vertical rods joined by a horizontal piece in the middle, and adjusted some control knob to turn on the loudspeaker. "This is a receiver," said George. Suddenly, to my surprise, I heard a strange language coming from the speaker. It was unlike any language I had ever heard before. "It's all arranged," George said, clearly satisfied with what was taking place. I wondered what was up his sleeve. "Just wait," he said, "in about 15 minutes look out over the sea." Then, after 10 minutes or so, I saw to my amazement a bright light above the water coming towards us. It grew larger as it approached, and when it reached a point near the bluff, a collection of sand dunes overlooking Urban Harbor, about 3 kilometers to the south of us, it stopped and changed course. The light now came parallel to the shore until it was vertically above us over the groin. Here it stopped again and hovered. It was now about the size of a tennis ball held at arm's length. It shone with a bluish-white light, sharply outlined, steady and not pulsating at all. It was a beautiful spectacle. I was quite overawed. I heard the radio speaker coming to life again, this time much stronger. George seemed to understand what the voice was saying. I did not take much notice of what was happening on the radio as I was looking up at the light. "This must be one of those spacecraft," I thought to myself. George said to me, "Edwin, listen carefully." I drew nearer to the instrument but still kept an eye on the object above us. Then I heard this voice again. This time it was in English and I could understand it clearly. The voice said, after addressing me by name, that he was the commander of the spacecraft above us and his name was Weora. He then explained who George was. That he was one of them and that he had come to live on our planet for a few years to study the conditions, the people and their habits, and so on. One of his tasks was to find someone who would be willing to start a group so that information about life in space could be given to those who were interested. He also told me that George's true name was Voldar and that I had been selected by him to start the group of people. He explained that they came from the planet Calders in another universe and that he hoped I would accept the job of starting such a group. I was thunderstruck. At that time I was 16 years old and I felt I was inexperienced and not qualified for such a task. However, I was subsequently told that I would be trained and that in all probability I'd meet others who would assist in the work. Before the spacecraft moved off, Weora announced that he would perform some aerial maneuvers which he described to us beforehand. First, the spacecraft would move east, out over the sea for a distance, returning then to the starting point. Then west, inland, about the same distance. Then they would go north along the coastline, and then south, next time returning to the same point above us on the groin. Then he would fly a circular orbit around the central point. When this was completed, he said he would depart and would like to demonstrate to me what it looked like from the ground when a spacecraft moved off at high acceleration. He said goodbye and with a few words in the strange language, which I later found out was Caldasian, he ended the radio transmission. We now watched the craft intently. Suddenly it streaked off at what must have been an incredible speed. One moment it was there, the next it was gone.